This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Gods of the Second World, written by Arthur Stone, translated by Mikhail Yagupov, performed by Kevin T. Collins. Chapter 1. The bushes were nothing to write home about. Had a medium-sized dog tried to hide there, it would run into a couple of serious problems. There were too few leaves, none at all at the bottom, but the top wasn't particularly lush either. There was almost no grass growing underneath, and thus nothing to rely upon for disguise down below. Not the best shelter by any account, in other words. Ross was larger than a mastiff, let alone a medium-sized dog, but he nevertheless chose this place to hide. What else could he do? There was nothing else available anywhere near, and every second counted. The group of beasts that suddenly emerged from a copse to the right left him no choice. It would hardly be prudent to run from creatures given extremely long limbs by the game developers. Those long-legged critters would catch him in a minute out in the open, and that's provided they don't hurry. Ross has seen enough second-world creatures, so their appearance gave him some idea of what they may be capable of. It was the second day in this area that he encountered no weak enemies, so it would be futile to hope that he would manage to dispatch this particular group. The distance was too great to find out such details as their level or any stats whatsoever, but the logic of the game told him that monsters the size of a well-fed bull would present a serious problem. Even a level 100 player would find it hard to face one of those, and Ross was nowhere near. And to encounter a pack would be perilous, even for a level 150. Ross saw a lot in the course of his 5 days on the road. He managed to kill a few dozen monsters, 13 of which turned out to be new, and received some decent achievements as a result. He'd had a few really close shaves, but his sturdy equipment, high stats, and set of various spells eventually saw him through. The ability to heal himself came in particularly handy. He also discovered a few previously unknown areas. He couldn't always move along the straight line drawn on the map, and his skills made him capable of recording everything his eye could see with great precision. His new transmogrification cube allowed him to create 6 items the likes of which had never existed in Second World. That, too, gave him quite a few pleasant bonuses. One of the items, namely a bracelet, turned out to be quite outstanding. Ross assumed he could get around 7 or 8,000 gold pieces for it, or perhaps even 10. He ran into all sorts of situations along the way, but the thread of his gaming life never got severed. He managed to avoid scenarios where respawning would be the only option. Circumspection, attentiveness, and a little bit of luck. He kept approaching his goal, step by cautious step, for death would invariably result in his being sent back to Agithric's mine, and he'd have to start all over again. This would result in the loss of 5 days, and who knows, the rulers of the Locked Lands may have given similar assignments to other groups as well. Should one of them turn out luckier than Ross, all his efforts will have been in vain. He would have to start again, should the beasts notice him. The sparse vegetation and his well-developed disguise skill were his only hope. He should also avoid movement and blinking, and it would probably make sense to skip every other breath, or perhaps even 2. One of the few leaves that grew at the bottom of the bush kept moving this way and that, barely perceptibly, right before his eyes. It kept vibrating, even though no wind blew, as if it had nervous tremors, just like Ross. It was rather elongated, of olive color, and looked like something you'd expect to find on a willow. The long vein at the center, with a network of very thin side vessels, was perfectly discernible. The leaf had a tiny gnarl at the bottom, reddish-brown, the size of a matchstick head. It looked so alien that even someone with zero knowledge of botany could identify it as a tumor or the nest of a parasite. Ross wondered about it in a detached sort of way. He had never noticed such minor details of seemingly little import before as a detailed representation of a tree leaf and its ailment. The gaming process was not affected by whether or not leaves had veins or how complex their biology was, and yet the powers that ruled over this world opined differently, taking every minor and unimportant detail into account. Ross wondered how the leaf would look under a microscope. Would one be able to see cells? And what if one went deeper? Membranes and nuclei. Deeper still, molecules, atoms, protons and neutrons? And would it go all the way down to quarks, or whatever the smallest particles were? The thoughts weren't particularly congruent to the situation, but he couldn't tell his head what exactly to think, so this was the line of thought he ended up with. Meanwhile, the mobs were in no hurry to leave. They started some strange bustle at the distance of some 200 paces from Ross's hiding place. Some of them clung together, persistently pecking at the hardened soil with their enormous duck beaks and scratching at it with their massive forepaws, ending with short but thick claws. The rest surrounded them, standing still and watching the odd actions of their kinsfolk attentively. The moment Ross started contemplating the foliage on the bush where he was hiding, something unexpected happened. A column of dust and earth erupted from the pit dug by the mobs. Ross was unfamiliar with the military business, but it seemed to him that a shell had exploded. The only things lacking were the sound, the fire, and the smoke. The majority of the mobs, who had stood motionlessly prior to that, all took off at once, launching a quick attack at something hiding underground. Ross heard a piercing shriek that nearly deafened him despite the distance. It was full of mortal pain and fear, then it stopped as instantly as it had started. The pack spent some 5 minutes in the pit, a churning mass of bodies looking almost monolithic. Then the mobs ceased their bustle and lazily headed for the copse, disappearing from sight shortly. Ross remembered that it was nothing but curiosity that had killed the proverbial cat, but he couldn't go on without finding out what had happened to the subterranean. He waited for about half an hour. Having made certain nothing out of the ordinary was going on, he cautiously approached the excavation site and took a look at the bottom of the pit. There was a cylindrically shaped crater there, with lumps of earth fallen from above at the bottom, mingling with shards of something that looked like white porcelain, or rather, the shell of an enormous egg. A skeleton of an unknown creature lay on the rubble. It was the size of an ox, or larger, with a long and thin tail that wouldn't look out of place on a reptile or a rat, six limbs, and a tiny flat head. Ross never saw anything like it, but given the beast's size, talons, and fangs, an encounter with one of these bode one no good. He climbed down and touched the bloodied skeleton. A flightless egg fledgling. Attention, you have found the remnants of a creature that has not yet been added to the world bestiary. You receive a reward, +1 to agility. You can receive the reward for discovering a new creature at the Academy of Magic. Achievement completed. Tireless monster researcher. Achievement bonus, +1 to perception, +2 to carrying capacity, +1 to essence of things, +1 to luck, +1 to reason, +2 undistributed secondary base stat points, +1 undistributed auxiliary stat point. Achievement unlocked. Monster researcher extraordinaire. Discover 45 monsters that have not yet been added to the World Bestiary by yourself to complete the achievement. Achievement bonus, random. Ross chuckled. He thought he should visit the Academy of Magic after all. Not so much to pick up any new spells, although those won't go amiss either. The discovered mobs were the primary reason. So far, he had dispatched 40 of the regular variety, and one got solid bonuses for the discovery of so much as a single species. What would he get for a family-sized pack like his? The voice of greed chuckled contentedly in his head, counting on getting a few tasty morsels. However, he'd have to reach the academy first. Ross got a set of fangs and talons from the skeleton. He decided to keep them in his bag. They might come in handy at some point, after all. If no one had discovered this flightless egg to date, no artisans would have used these ingredients. Could it be that they were required for crafting a legendary sword or some such? But what was that thing in the distance? The terrain was perfectly flat, so he could see every bump. It was neither a rock nor a molehill. If his eyes played no tricks on him, it was something out of the ordinary. Ross thought that he would get himself killed someday, just like the cat he had thought of earlier. His inner feline was certainly restless right then, trying to stick its nose into all kinds of things. But that was the direction he'd been planning to follow at any rate, so his curiosity would not get in the way of his plans. It was no stone, nor was it any other ordinary object that fooled the eye by seeming unusual. Nevertheless, Ross had to admit he had rarely seen anything of this sort before. Dying in the game was a really complex issue. Some players, once they get there, respawn at their pre-selected location virtually instantly. However, many players do everything they can to make sure their reincarnation happens sooner rather than later. The time between the killing blow and resurrection can be extended by means of leveling up, investing one's points into a specific set of stats by using magical objects with corresponding properties, and by receiving buffs from certain classes. Why would one want to extend the brief moment of oblivion? Because it could be vital. For instance, if one died from the fiery breath of a horrendous boss during a raid, one would weaken one's party. Instead of receiving a bunch of trophies, one's fellow players would have to face all kinds of trouble. Only a complete noob would believe that players who deal the most damage are the most important for such raids. They are necessary, that much goes without saying. However, without proper support, they are but cannon fodder. And there are all kinds of support. Players with effective resurrection spells are particularly useful, and effective means they reduce the loss of experience after death can be cast quickly and use a minimum amount of mana. Spells of that kind can revive a dead player in an instant. A fighter rejoins the battle after a mere wave of the staff, a lot worse for the wear, with a minimum amount of HP and mana, and without any buffs. But the important thing is that it would still be a live and active player, rather than a useless body at a faraway respawn point. The owner of the body in question must have invested a lot into extending the moment of oblivion as far as possible. Ross had to walk a few hundred feet to reach the corpse, and that took a while. Also, he had no idea about how long the body had been there. The player must have succumbed to some long-term spell, dealing damage seconds and minutes after it was used. It could also have been accumulated damage causing critical bleeding that could not be stopped. The fact that the body stayed there as long as it had meant the player must have been a strong one, and their last battle would have been visible from afar, yet nothing of the sort had happened, even though it took Ross quite a while to hide from the grasshoppers. There were no known ways of delaying one's respawn for this long a period. That left three possible options. Either the player had come to die, or they had been carried there, or alternatively, they had died voluntarily without providing resistance. Maybe the player even helped their killers. The latter, though, was extremely unlikely. Ross had only encountered one such masochist over the course of the time spent in the game. On the other hand, how exactly does one encounter oneself? Ross looked around carefully, but he didn't notice anything suspicious. That wouldn't mean anything in real life either, and given such options as invisibility, magical disguise, etc., so common for the game, his observations were utterly useless. Nevertheless, it did give him some peace of mind. It was as though the body had been waiting for Ross. It dissolved into thin air as soon as he got close. That gave Ross a long pause. Up to that moment, he had only come across monsters. Some were harmless, while others were not. They were controlled by a state-of-the-art AI, but their behavior was more or less predictable. Now he had encountered his first player. And those were the unpredictable ones. Not a single monster would voluntarily hide in an ambush near the place of someone's death for hours on end. But a hardened killer would. It would be extremely effective in cases of property loss. Either the deceased player would come to get their property, or they would ask their friends for help. The result was the same, however. One's potential prey would turn up where expected sooner or later. In other words, if one didn't know what the matter was, it would be prudent for one not to approach any corpses. Yet that's exactly what Ross did. And he had valuable items aplenty. His name may not have been bathed in the blood of innocent victims, yet everyone had a chance to lose some part of their property. The grass rustled softly as narrow black bodies of fiendish creatures emerged one by one. They looked like rats on steroids, but their snouts were unnaturally sharpened and their eyes were mounted on short stalks. Well, the construction of their eyes was unimportant anyway. Ross had killed so many rodents since the times of his absolute noobhood that he could dispose of them without engaging his mind at all. His reflexes could take care of that. There were several opponents, so he cast a chaos aura over the entire mob the first thing. Then he used entangling roots to immobilize one of the mobs, cast sleep on another, and dodged the remaining two, managing to deal damage to each. One got a chaos arrow, and the other a fireball. The grass started to make crackling sounds from the heat, and his leg jerked from the first bite. Pure, unadulterated fun. Well, it wasn't much fun, actually. Ross had no illusions about his current condition. He didn't stand a chance against four high-level opponents without a pet. And high-level opponents were all he had encountered in these lands so far. Yet that was no reason to sell his life cheaply. An arrow and a fireball, followed by another arrow and another fireball, and then another blow right on the cheeky, pointed snout. But what was that? His opponent ceased to show any signs of life after yet another attack. Then another one fell down lifeless right next to the first. Suddenly, Ross found he was winning, no matter how odd that might have seemed. His HP bar was still perilously short, but he had enough mana, as always, so healing wouldn't be a problem. Another fireball, followed by another arrow. The third mob grew still, adding to Ross's experience. The fourth one fell a moment later, but that didn't please Ross at all, for it hadn't been magic that killed the beast, but rather a long white arrow that ran right through the mob's body. The game was not the same as real life. There were other sentient entities but people, namely those controlled by artificial intelligence. Some of them were capable of using all kinds of weapons. Nevertheless, Ross had no doubts about the fact that the Archer wasn't a mob. Only a human being could wait for a player to dispatch three opponents to kill the fourth without any repercussions. The player may well be the next victim. Human players don't fret much over such things. Archers were a necessary class, but they weren't quite as popular as they used to be in older games. Second World wouldn't let you learn a few skills that would let you reign supreme over all your opponents. You would need the most basic accuracy skill for the arrow to find its target. Even though it was much easier to learn archery in the game than it would be in real life, there were many players intimidated by so much as a hint of possible problems. The bow was too complex a weapon for a game where most players valued simplicity above all. Ross dashed to the left, and then to the right, doing a somersault. Then he jumped up and started running backwards as fast as he could, only to change his trajectory in a completely unpredictable manner the next second. No matter how skilled an archer might be, a moving target is hard to hit. All he needed to do was discover the archer's location and then use the same hare tactics to move in the opposite direction. A figure holding a bow appeared from out of nowhere in a place that had been completely empty a few seconds ago. That wouldn't have been a problem in itself. There were many skills, after all. The problem was that the player appeared some 5 steps away from Ross. Even a completely green noob would hit their mark from such a distance. The bow was lowered, and there was no arrow. And yet that didn't mean that the stranger hadn't intended to kill Ross. There were plenty of sadists in the game, fond of taking their time before they would kill their opponent, especially if they were certain of their impunity. And this one looked as certain as they got. You could tell by his happy smile. However, the smile was hardly triumphant, more like slightly confused, perhaps, or even completely gormless. The name was silly as well, Macho Strongman. Who could guess what to expect from someone who'd voluntarily choose such a name? The player raised his hand to greet Ross. "Hi. Why do you run around like that? They're all dead. Look at the bodies all around." Ross wondered if this guy was mocking him. The rats had nothing to do with it. The most dangerous species in Second World was Homo sapiens. The same was true for every other world, actually. Ross stopped. Any attempt to dodge an arrow would look really silly now. He raised his hand to return the greeting, but kept looking around, just in case. "What are you looking at?" asked the stranger, instantly providing a reply. "There's no one left here anymore. It's good that you're here. I'm all on my own, and it's no fun to be alone." The voice and the manner of speaking were those of a teenager, whereas the character looked like a 30-year-old male, tall and muscled, with a square chin. There was an obvious discrepancy there. The character's legs were thin as matchsticks as well, and seemed incongruous to an otherwise well-built body. The character seemed to have no interest in killing him, so he decided they might as well talk. After all, he was the only living soul encountered by Ross over the last couple of days, with the exception of the monsters, who were never big on conversation. Conversations with those were usually brief and involved no words. "How did you end up in a place like this anyway?" This simple question drove the stranger into a stupor. He replied hesitantly, as though he was tearing the words from the very fabric of his soul. "Well, I've been walking in this direction, just walking, and this is where I ended up. Or, rather, we did." "We? Didn't you just tell me you were the last one left? Sure, there was also Black Shrek, but he's just bought it. His body was lying right here. You've seen it. We nearly got killed. I've stayed right here, but Black Shrek's body disappeared after a while. I'm no good as a healer. Who killed him? These? Ross pointed to the carcass of a rat. Say what? Nah, these are tiny things. They never grow above the 80th level. It was them. The player waved toward the copse that a herd of grasshoppers had disappeared into previously. You fought the mobs with long hind legs and knee joints facing the wrong direction? We fought all sorts. There were lots of them. You come across some really strong ones. You're low level, so you'd be best off keeping away. They'll send you to your respawn point before you know what hit you. The border of their territory is marked by those trees over there. For some reason, high-level mobs never cross it. That was convenient. Me and Black Shrek rested and healed ourselves here while we waited, and then went over there to fight. You can backtrack a little and you're safe. How did you manage to get here, anyway? I'm almost at 170, and Black Shrek had an even higher level, so it wasn't that hard for us here. As for you, small fry like this will snuff you at once. They nearly killed you, after all. Ross refrained from assuring his new acquaintance that the mobs barely managed to deal him any damage at all, and that he hadn't needed any help in the first place. He had a whole bunch of reasons to keep from advertising his varied talents, and he had no intention whatsoever of discussing them with someone he'd just met. My disguise skill is at a pretty decent level, so it's hard for them to spot me. They even kill level 200 players here. Lots of dangerous places all around. No disguise will help you there. They'll kill you if you're on your own. What do you say if we head on together? I can protect you. Where are you headed to now? Let's go together. It'll be more fun that way. Ross shook his head. Sorry, macho strong man, but I have some important business to attend to, and it will take me far from here. It won't be any fun for you to tag along. Why is that? Where are you headed? The capital. Cool! I love cities. They look nice, and there are always lots of people. Are you sure you really need to go there, though? There's a river further down the road, monsters on one bank, and joined NPC and player forces on the other. They keep fighting to prevent the monsters from crossing. They'd kill you on sight there, no matter who you are. There's no way of crossing over. You won't manage it. It's just too hard. Ross shrugged. In that case, I'll have to go around them. It's gonna be a lot more fun here. There are lots of real cool monsters. It's a pity Black Shrek is no longer with us, though. It was much easier for us to fight side by side. Without him, I'll get snuffed in a jiffy, and I don't like dying. What about you? Ross died so many times in the game that he no longer kept count. Most of the deaths were self-inflicted, too, so he gave an appropriate response. I've gotten used to it by now. Lucky you. I'll never get used to something like that. I hate it when everything goes dark. You know what? You'll never get there without me. The two of us don't have such great chances either, but we might get lucky. So let's get going. It's boring to just stand here like this. How did you manage to get here on your own, then? There'd be lots of those creatures on your way. I had a party with me. All sorts of players had gotten together, and then we headed over here. It was fun. At first, that is. Less fun afterwards. It's such a pity. Nearly everyone bought it back there. Me, Black Shrek, and the Cerulean Cat were the only ones left. It was pretty cool. Cerulean Cat could heal us in battle, and we could defeat a whole bunch of mobs together. Then things went south. She got herself killed, and we could do nothing to help her, so it was just the two of us left. Neither of us could heal, but it was fun anyway. And now Black Shrek's gone, too. But I found you. What's your level? 66. Say what? You're weaker than a mosquito in these parts. Ha ha, a mosquito. What skills do you have? A regular mage? Fireballs and stuff? Well, I can heal, too, and I know a few buffs to boot. Buffs are cool. Hit me with everything you can, and let's get going already. If we're attacked, don't start healing me right away. Wait until I give them a few proper blows. Then you can start with the healing. That way, they won't all attack you at once. You aren't much use, of course, but your healing skill may come in handy, too. I like it when someone can heal you. A lot more fun this way. So what do you say? Should we get going? Ross nodded and set off. His new acquaintance seemed odd, but it was a game, after all. The oddities can just be a grown-up player's way of playing the fool to let off steam. Or it could be a young lad who'd just come of age, not particularly bright, and still childish in many ways. The possibilities were endless. Anyway, the player offered help, so it would be stupid to turn up his nose on such an offer. Any kind of help would be welcome right now. Apart from that, he was extremely officious and would be hard to shake off. Ross already wasted a good deal of time approaching the front line where the uncountable wild hordes that had broken out of the locked lands were fighting legions of fighters and NPCs alike, all of whom were trying to stop the invasion. The fighting was so hard that some places were completely stripped of all vegetation, let alone anything else. Ross had two very close shaves when he got too close to combat zones. He had to diverge considerably from the straight line drawn on the map. He'd hoped it would get quieter, closer to the river, but Macho's strongman appeared to be claiming the opposite. Why would his new acquaintance lie to him? There seemed to be no point in that. The implication was that he'd have to diverge even further from the shortest way. Neither a single player nor a group would stand a chance if they tried to fight their way through the ranks of the horde monsters, all of them high level. Besides, there were lots of them. They were powerful and had strong social cohesion, so one would have to face dozens and even hundreds of foes. Even when Ross could revive high-level pets, it would be extremely risky. It was even more so now. But there should be a way, somewhere. Incidentally, what about pets? Macho Strongman claimed that monsters didn't grow above the 80th level in these parts. Given Ross's abilities, he'd be able to revive those, as well as stronger ones. Level 99 was his limit for the time being. If he leveled up by one, he could revive a level 100 pet. Such a pet would no longer be a weapon of mass destruction like some of his older ones, but it would still be a great help in battle. Apart from that, he had a few good records in the pet skill textbook. He'd be able to make the summoned creature much stronger. So things weren't as grim as they looked after all, and Ross would soon gain a reliable helper. "Hey, Octopus, we're in." The man who had spent an hour in his car without making a single move adjusted the bullet-like earphone unhurriedly, glanced at his watch, and stepped out, hardly making any sound as he closed the door behind him. Under the streetlights, he looked like one of the crowd, with no distinctive features. High-quality clothes of the sort worn by one out of three people, medium height, unremarkable facial features one would have a hard time to recollect, and an unfocused gaze that didn't stop on anyone. The name was John, not Octopus. That wasn't the name he was given at birth. However, the name was his for today, and anyone who'd study his ID would find out as much. They weren't just well-made forgeries. They were just as good as the real thing. In the unlikely case of a routine police check, any officer who would enter the data from the ID into their computer would find out that John Shelby really existed and worked for the Federal Disease Control Center. Even the photograph in his ID would confirm it. John had a very vague idea about the difference between diphtheria and scarlet fever. The other members of his group were even more ignorant about contagious diseases. But they were unlikely to be questioned about the finer detail of their work, and the policeman would know even less about the subject after all. A medic or a paramedic was the best kind of legend for all sorts of secret activities. John had worked on three different continents, and his organization's official backstory would often involve public health in one way or another. Moreover, he even had to deal with a group of carriers of a most dangerous strain of bacteria that got loose due to carelessness once. Fortunately, it wasn't airborne, so the problem was solved quickly and without any repercussions. John killed 6 people that time. He didn't enjoy it, notwithstanding the stereotypes. People who are overly fond of dirty work are never hired for it. They are amateurs and can make grave mistakes in the simplest situation or go out of control altogether. And who would want that? A lathe operator isn't supposed to have any personal feelings for the parts he makes. The same principle applied to John and his colleagues. They'd have to take care of things on their own turf today. This used to happen before, and none of them felt comfortable about it. It wasn't just that their affairs were illegal on every level, including the federal. John's work was above all laws, including those regulating the lives of his fellow countryfolk of the more mundane sort. Safety measures were more of a problem. Those were treated extremely seriously in this country. In order to impress the bosses with a job well done, he'd have to avoid the near-ubiquitous CCTV cameras, or leaving a record in police computers, or revealing his identity during a check. A credit card in a parking meter? That's a sure way of leaving a trail. Traffic police shining a flashlight at your license plate. The data would be saved somewhere for certain. A cell phone registered in your real name was on while you were at work. Mobile phone operators keep such information for years, and it's easily available. Anyone can run into a routine check, anywhere, with or without a reason, and a regular person won't have so much as an inkling about how obvious a trace they'd left. Some tropical country where the only checkpoint is manned by a soldier with a large belly who'd develop a lifelong selective amnesia concerning your identity immediately after receiving a rolled-up banknote of relatively low denomination. Today's assignment made John deal with public health in two aspects, his official legend and his target. The St. Francis Hospital was an old and well-respected medical institution with a security service of its own, and many avenues of approach, most of them modernized recently and hard to control. However, the hospital's security service only controlled a number of isolated checkpoints, so it wouldn't cause any problems while he would approach the target. Nevertheless, that didn't mean they could boldly park their cars right next to the central entrance. No matter how low-key their handling of the operation, one should leave no discernible traces. This is why the Brainiacs were hacking into every computer they could access right now to make sure no mention of John's group remains anywhere, and computers got really smart over the last couple of years. It was most unfortunate that their amnesia could not be bought. However, one could buy an intermediate party or an actual person possessing the necessary information. There'd always be someone who might help. All one needed was to know where to look and to have something they'd be interested in ready at hand. John had everything he could need. He worked for the government of the world's most powerful country, after all. It could bring a hail of expensive winged toys over any part of the planet if state interests required it. The rocket-carrying destroyers didn't patrol all the planet's oceans for nothing, after all. And if those interests required someone to break into the St. Francis Hospital to get all sorts of medical information that you cannot find online about a person, their right for privacy notwithstanding, they used the services of John's organization, which always strove to maintain a low profile instead of destroyers. The interests of national security required a look at one of the patients today, and John was the one who'd have to do the looking. That was why he was approaching the doors he'd needed in a wide-paced gait. CCTV cameras, live security guards, and intelligent security systems were nothing when the state really needed to get the data it needed. If some of its own laws have to be ignored to enable it, then so be it. The interests of the state were above everything else. The legislation was too complex and occasionally ambiguous, and a legion of attorneys and other wise guys have managed to tangle it as much as possible over the years. A country cannot afford to waste years on endless litigation. After all, it has a sword that can cut right through any legal Gordian knot. And John was the very blade of this sword. He got to the door he had needed. It was locked, but could something as trivial as a lock stop someone working for the government? Breaking in would be unnecessary. After all, it might bother the patients, and most importantly, leave a trail. John had an electronic key, a perfect copy of the original, made by some unknown nerd. It could be one of those illegal workers who served the interests of street gangs and had no idea about the real identity of some of their clients. His organization wasn't that large, and some of the smaller jobs had to be delegated to third-party contractors, completely ignorant as to what they were doing. The lock winked to him in a friendly way with its green LED eye, and the door opened instantly. The ward stank of medicines and disinfectants, just like the corridor, but there was a new component now. Oil, metal, and hot plastic, the smells of working equipment. And there was plenty of equipment here. John didn't know much about medicine, but it wasn't hard to identify the mechanical ventilator and other equipment that surrounded the oblong life support capsule from three sides. He moved closer and read the laconic ID plate that said Yevgeny Rostovsev. It was followed by an alphanumeric patient's ID, but it was of no interest to John. The first and last name were enough. That was their client. There could be no random coincidence. The moment of truth was approaching. That which should happen would happen. Now, John would open the capsule, take a look at the comatose patient, take out a phone with a number that cannot be traced, and then he would report to his superiors so that the state would know everything it needed to. Then he would wait for an answer. His orders may be to close the capsule and leave in the same way as he had gotten in. But that was unlikely. John was hardly ever sent on insignificant errands of that sort. He was one of the agents capable of following really complex orders, and have zero joy at the prospect of killing someone. The capsule opened. John took a look inside, then produced the telephone in a leisurely manner and pressed the button. He listened to the signal, and then, when he got connected, he said the following words in a voice devoid of all passion. He's not in the capsule. Chapter 2
Bubble! Heal! I need a fix! Don't sleep! Get on with the healing, will ya?
Bubble was Ross's new name. It didn't show much taste. As a matter of fact, it sucked outright. But the thing was that he had never used anything similar before. That wasn't much of a disguise, but he had to take every little detail into account when it was a question of safety. He had already earned the reputation of a shrewd player. Whoever would be looking for him might be likely to disregard players with idiotic names. He changed his appearance drastically, too, of course. He tried to go for the dark mage look, but did it just like the players whose imagination leaves a lot to be desired. That meant taking one of the standard body types and making a few insignificant adjustments. Now he was trapped in a body of an almost 7-foot-tall thug with a prominent nose and a square chin. A rather grotesque parody of the necromancer archetype, if he ever saw one. That was a good thing. Nosy players would be aware of Ross's talents, so they wouldn't probably expect such bold behavior on his part. Necromancers have skills similar to his, after all, since they can use resurrected creatures as pets. They were a popular class, since a necromancer could easily level up on one's own. So the enemy was looking for a leaf, weren't they? There was no point in making it look like a coin or a piece of paper. One could hide it easily in a forest, after all. At any rate, he planned to pass for a battle mage with necromancer abilities, so he didn't intend to advertise the fact that he could provide serious support if needed. That was why he refrained from using some of the buffs he had, and now that the two of them got attacked all of a sudden, he didn't put a lot of effort into healing Macho Strongman. He only bothered to do something once the situation got critical, which meant the player's HP stayed dangerously low. He was already sick to his guts of these creatures. One or two of them would attack every 20 minutes or so. They looked like enormous greenish-gray newts and ambushed them from the tall grass that grew on the half-step, half-forest terrain, attacking them unexpectedly from the distance of just a few paces. There were a few times Ross might easily have died. The mob's levels could get as high as 165, and they would initially attack the first target they'd see. Once Macho Strongman started dealing them damage, they would switch their attention to him, but it would still take an effort to survive that long. Ross would most likely have managed a single newt without much effort. His total stats could make a few level 200 players jealous. However, the level itself wasn't a mere number, but a certain coefficient that, among other things, amplified and diminished damage when the level gap was wide enough. It also affected the chances of hitting and missing, as well as whether or not a negative magical effect would work. Those monsters were high level, which gave them a good chance of defeating Ross. Of course, he refrained from showcasing his abilities to a random stranger and diligently played the part of a none-too-bright noob who ended up in a place that very few players had managed to reach due to an outrageously strange set of circumstances. Fortunately, Macho Strongman did not seem too curious, so he was spared the need to invent elaborate details. You kill the Step Drung. XP received 343. You gain a level. Points left until the next level, 899,912. One of the newts croaked plaintively and fell down to the ground lifeless. Ross's high-level partner could dispatch the remaining one without any help, but he still healed him once again while he kept hacking at the last newt with his curved and jagged dagger, oblivious of everything. The mob's HP bar started to blink bloody red and then disappeared. Victory at last. Macho Strongman put his dagger back into his scabbard, sat down wearily, crossing his legs, and complained, "These croakers have no good eating on them at all. I could really do with some meat. It restores your health faster, too." "I could cook us some." "So could I. We'll end up with inedible crap anyway." "I wouldn't be so sure about that. My cooking skill is leveled up pretty well. I could probably make something decent even out of those." "Word? Well, might as well get on with it. A snack would be nice. I'm really tired of fighting them. What's your cooking stat?" Ross had cooking leveled up to 13, which may not seem like much when you think about it. However, for an auxiliary stat that few players bother with, it was pretty high. A level 200 player would be likely to have fewer points to some of the skills that would come in a lot handier than cooking, let alone a level 66 noob who isn't supposed to have any stats remotely resembling that. Ross cursed himself mentally for having mentioned his culinary skill in the first place. He had to fib. "I've gotten it up to 6 only recently." "6? Way cool, especially at your level. Thinking of becoming a cook? Well, there are worse ways to make a living. At least you'll always have food and warmth, and you can still earn some money." You'd need to level up to 15 at least to make any money off it, or better still, up to 20. At least that's what I heard when I tried to level up my cooking. So why didn't you? Duh, too boring. I just quit. Hey, you've leveled up to 67. Congratulations, you're leveling up. By the way, why aren't we in a party? Let me join. You'll get more XP that way. A healer who's a stranger hardly gets anything at all. A party was a whole different kettle of fish. Ross had to disguise himself and mask his abilities after all. Something like that is much easier to do when you play on your own. It wasn't that hard to stay inconspicuous as a party member either, but he'd have to use certain disguise skills and remember about them all the time. Another reason to worry, in other words. Apart from that, Macho Strongman might notice the odd behavior of Ross's HP bar, and especially his mana bar. His regeneration levels were insanely high. Even the highest level players would envy him. And yet, declining a group invitation in a situation like this wouldn't just be suspicious, it would be completely unthinkable. He drew a mental sigh and accepted the request. "Hey, Bubble, what are those herbs that you gather all the time?" "They'll do us for seasonings." "Cool. So we might be in for a tasty meal after all, and here I was thinking you were leveling up your alchemist skill." "I plan to do that as well." "Why would you? It's so boring." "You have to level up every skill you have. When I pick up an herb, I get a few points to my herbalism skill. Whenever I roast a piece of meat, I level up my cooking. So you keep on growing in all sorts of directions. I've seen a player with 3 auxiliary stats up to 20, the Tuna Kahuna. Ever heard of him?" "Can't say I have. He plays in such a boring way. He's been here longer than me, but the likes of these," he pointed to the newt carcasses, "would make short work of him. He spends a lot of time on silly stuff, and he still isn't much of a fighter." Ross had 5 auxiliary stats leveled up to 20, some of them considerably so. A few more were almost at that level, but he had no intention to confide in Macho Strongman. Nor did he intend to tell him he hasn't been bored once since he'd started playing. There just wasn't any time for that. Ever. Macho Strongman kept on talking 19 to the dozen, but he switched to a more pertinent topic. "We'll snuff 2 of these crawling croakers easily, even top-level ones, but 3 would be a pain in the ass. You're not much of a healer." "I'm a battle mage, as a matter of fact, not a first aid kit." "That's a pity. No point wasting your time on one of those. Mages are 2 a penny, and a good healer is always sought after. There are lots of campaigns where folks can't find a healer, so they cannot get anything done as a result. It's a real pity when you spend so much time gathering everyone together only to cancel everything. Healers always get good loot, and everyone protects them. Mobs don't even come close to their armor, so you don't have to repair anything. It's a pretty cool class." "Why don't you become one yourself, then?" "Nah, too boring. Hey, smells nice. Can I have a taste?" "Once it's ready. Leave it alone for the time being." "All right, then. The farther we go, the more croakers we meet, and they're all pretty strong. We'll probably get to the battlefield soon enough. They all have insanely high levels there. I guess we'll get killed." "Why are you coming along, then?" "Oh, it's so boring to be on your own. There may be no one there, after all, and we might survive. Tell you what, I won't mind if 3 croakers attack us at once. Let them." "Are you that anxious to die?" "I hate dying, but we can handle 3 now." "You said it'd be tough." "Well, there'll be 3 of us, you know. We'll manage." "3 of us? Have you forgotten how to count to 3 all of a sudden? Well, someone's coming this way. It must be the meat. Smells so good." "Who could it be?" "No idea. Someone. It'll be a lot more fun once there's 3 of us. You'll see." Ross wasn't having much fun. Macho Strongman and Nail in the Head were devouring the freshly roasted seasoned meat ravenously, but he had no appetite at all. He had every reason to be nervous. In general, there was nothing surprising about their encounter with a lone player on a territory invaded by new and unknown monsters. Thousands of adventurers would hurry to such an area, so there'd be nothing improbable about this fact, as one might have thought. The fact that the new player wasn't aggressive and didn't try to prove his superior skills by attacking the first people he met wasn't all that strange either. People tend to try to get along in general, and although there's always a certain risk of running into some sadistic freak, it's not that great. The suspicious thing was that this player could have been Macho Strongman's twin. His appearance had nothing to do with it. The newcomer was slightly above average height, rosy-cheeked and somewhat effeminate, but with bulging muscles. Another incongruous combination, in other words. And his name was just as stupid. The way both players leveled up was equally odd. Macho Strongman used his bow at every opportunity, sometimes even in a battle at close quarters. If he didn't, he'd rely on his dagger, but he used magic too, spending all of his mana points at one go. He referred to himself as an excellent DPS character, yet failed to deal any solid damage. It took him an unnaturally long time to dispatch even a relatively low-level monster. That was unsurprising. Players usually develop a cohesive set of skills, investing all of their points into class-related stats. Those in favor of going in every direction at once never rose above the average level. Such characters were usually referred to as botched. In such cases, it was recommended to get a new character or to reset one's primary stats, a complicated process and costly to boot. Players usually abandoned botched characters on low levels once they'd fully realize they'd made a mistake. One would normally waste a minimum of time by that point, and it would be a lot easier to start over with a new character than to try fixing the botched one. To see a botched player with the level of 170 was near impossible. One could only find them among clan players. They would normally specialize in a specific craft and do nothing else, thus confining them to a single, non-combative skill. Something of that sort could require all sorts of stats, and they wouldn't necessarily pertain to a single battle-oriented set. And yet Macho Strongman had no clan icon next to his name. He also kept emphasizing the fact that he found everything unrelated to actual fighting too boring, and yet his character was almost a cripple. Ross didn't know any details, but he harbored a strong suspicion that the player had distributed his stats on a whim. He wished to be a fire mage after one level up, an archer after another, and a swordsman after yet another one. Hence the varied weaponry and the barely effective skills that he had never managed to level up properly, opting for new ones instead. In other words, Macho Strongman was as weird as they got. Ross could bear with a single weirdo in a small company, but two of them at once? Nail in the Head had the level of 192, but he was hardly of any more use than Macho Strongman. They'd had three run-ins with the newts, and so far all Ross could see was two botched characters bumbling clumsily around monsters that any damager worth their salt could finish them off in less than a dozen simple attacks. Even a tank character would dispatch them quicker. These two were utterly hopeless, though. Even though their levels were higher than those of the monsters, they were still inferior in every other respect. That included such things as basic skill and competence. And those were most conspicuously lacking. How those two giggly chatterbox lummoxes managed to reach those levels must be one of the second world's greatest secrets. Ross also failed to understand how he became saddled with those guys, but he was certain their encounter could not have been mere coincidence. No one in their right mind would believe that. Even a single botched character of this level made no sense whatsoever. Two of them at once, in the middle of what was technically a wasteland, well, that was clearly an unknown party interfering. Both were overjoyed to join the first noob they met, deciding they should come along of their own free will. Yeah, right. That much was pretty suspicious by itself, not to mention the rest of it. Could they have had their stats reset and redistributed in a silly way and then sent towards the Locked Lands? But why? To kidnap Ross? But why would they go to such lengths, doing something that made no sense? More likely, someone was trying to confuse him. Why could it be? Why would they want him? He had no answers. He was following two doofuses who had seemed to be convinced about being among the greatest fighters known to humanity, watching their pathetic fights with monsters and getting more and more clueless about what he might have gotten himself into this time. But it was definitely something. A hobby of his, as it were. "Why did we head back?"